Ever heard that saying, a man who is his own lawyer has a fool for a client?
Haha. Yeah, I think we've all heard that one at some point.
Well, get this. The U.S. Constitution might actually disagree.
Oh, how so?
Today, we're going to deep dive into a case that kind of throws a wrench in that whole idea.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Which case are we looking at?
Ferretta v. California. This case is fascinating because it really pits two fundamental Sixth Amendment rights right up against each other.
I see. And those are.
The right to an attorney and the right to represent yourself in court.
Right. So the right to counsel and the right to self-representation.
Exactly.
Okay, so lay it on me. What's the story here?
It all starts with Anthony Ferretta.
Okay.
He was charged with grand theft
Ah,
and
well.
actually wasn't his first run-in with the law.
Interesting.
So when a public defender was assigned to his case, Ferretta decided to try a different approach.
I think I know where this is going.
Yeah, he basically said thanks, but no thanks to the public defender.
He wanted to represent himself.
Exactly. He actually filed a request to represent himself.
Whoa.
He expressed concerns about his assigned lawyers, big caseload and all that.
I see. So feeling like maybe he wouldn't get adequate representation, that makes sense.
Yeah, and he even mentioned that he'd actually successfully defended himself in a previous case.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this wasn't his first rodeo. So what did the judge say? Did they just let him represent himself?
Well, yeah. Initially, the judge agreed to Ferretta's request.
Really?
I mean, who knows what was going through the judge's mind at that moment?
Right. Maybe Ferretta was just super convincing, or I don't know, maybe the judge was like, you know what? You want to go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe a little bit of both.
Interesting. But of course, it can't be that easy, right?
You got it. A few weeks later, plot twist.
Ooh, what happened?
The judge decided to hold this, like, special hearing,
Oh.
to kind of reevaluate Ferretta's whole ability to handle his own defense.
Oh.
So the judge essentially put Ferretta on the spot, started grilling him about, like, legal procedures.
Like a pop quiz on courtroom basics, huh?
Yeah. The judge asked him about things like the hearsay rule, how juries are selected, all that kind of stuff.
Yo, putting him right in the hot seat. So how did Ferretta do? Did he pass the pop quiz?
Not quite. Based on Ferretta's answers, the judge decided to actually revoke his right to self-representation.
He changed his mind.
Yeah. He said that Ferretta hadn't, quote unquote, intelligently waived his right to counsel.
What does that even mean, intelligently waived?
Well, the judge basically argued that Ferretta didn't fully understand the risks and the complexity of representing himself. Like, he didn't get the possible consequences of going it alone.
Okay, so the judge had a change of heart and decided it was in Ferretta's best interest to have an attorney after all.
Exactly.
So, case closed.
Nope, not so fast.
Of course not. What happened next?
So the California courts, they initially upheld the judge's decision.
Okay, so it sounded like that was going to be the end of the story.
Right, but then
Dun, dun, dun.
the case ended up before the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's where things really took a turn.
No way. So the Supreme Court got involved. This is getting good.
I know, right? The Supreme Court ultimately sided with Ferretta.
Really? Why?
And their reasoning, it was all about some pretty fundamental legal principles that still impact the justice system today.
That's amazing. So, wait, the Supreme Court was saying you have a constitutional right to be your own lawyer, even if you, I don't know, even if you might not be the best at it.
Well, it's not quite that simple. Hold on. Let me bring in our expert to break down the Supreme Court's decision for us.
All right, let's unpack this. So, the majority opinion, it was written by Justice Stewart, and get this, they went all the way back, like way back to early English and American legal traditions.
Okay, it sounds like they did their homework.
They were really trying to understand like the historical context of self-representation.
I see, tracing its roots.
Yeah. And their argument was that although the Sixth Amendment very clearly outlines the right to counsel, it doesn't explicitly force a lawyer on someone who wants to represent themselves.
Okay, so there's this nuance in the Sixth Amendment.
Yeah. It's more about having the option of counsel, not being forced to have counsel.
That's really interesting. So, walk me through the court's reasoning here. Like, what specifically in the Sixth Amendment convinced them?
Well, they really zeroed in on a particular phrase. They kept coming back to the language, assist in his defense.
Assist in his defense.
Yeah. And they argued that this phrasing suggests the ultimate control over the defense. It rests with the accused, not the lawyer.
So, it's not just about having a lawyer present. but about who's actually calling the shots.
Precisely. And for the court, that pointed to a deeper principle, you know?
What principle?
Autonomy.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, they put a ton of emphasis on that concept.
So basically, the court was saying that forcing a lawyer on someone who's adamant about representing themselves, it would actually violate their Sixth Amendment rights.
Exactly. It's like saying, we know better than you. Which totally goes against the idea of individual liberty that, like, the whole Sixth Amendment is designed to protect.
Wow, I never thought about it like that before. That's a really interesting interpretation of the Sixth Amendment.
Yeah.
But was everybody on the Supreme Court cool with this? Like, was it a unanimous decision?
Well, not exactly.
Who wasn't happy about it?
Justices Berger and Blackmun, they weren't quite convinced.
Okay, what was their take?
Well, they wrote a dissenting opinion, and they raised some, you know, pretty serious concerns. They were worried about, like, the potential for unfair trials if people who weren't properly trained, you know, in the law are allowed to represent themselves.
That makes sense, right? Hmm. I mean, even for experienced lawyers, courtrooms can feel like, I don't know, like a minefield.
Right. Exactly. So imagine throwing someone in there with no legal training. It could be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, for sure.
So their dissent, it focused on the possible harm to the whole justice system.
I see. So they weren't saying self-representation was bad in itself, just that it could have unintended consequences.
Right. They worried it could, like, overwhelm the courts, lead to less accurate verdicts, you know, things like that.
So it's this constant tension between individual rights and, like, the need for a smooth-running system.
Exactly. And it's a tension that, honestly, people are still arguing about today.
It sounds like the dissenting justices made some good points. What else do they have to say?
Well, they pointed out that the Sixth Amendment, it explicitly guarantees the right to counsel.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say anything about the right to self-representation.
Oh, so they were looking at, like, the actual wording of the amendment.
Right. They argued that if the Founding Fathers, you know, if they had wanted to make self-representation a separate right, they would have written it down explicitly.
Interesting. It's wild how the majority and the dissent could interpret the same amendment so differently.
It's all about interpretation, right?
Yeah, and this case really shows how that interpretation can shape, like, the whole course of justice.
For sure. It's really a testament to the power of legal interpretation.
So, okay, the Supreme Court gave the green light to self-representation. But did they put any, you know, like, any rules around it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They realized they couldn't just let anyone waltz into a courtroom and play lawyer. I mean, that could be a mess.
Right. Chaos in the court.
Yeah, totally. So they knew they needed some safeguards.
Okay, what kind of safeguards?
Well, their main concern was to make sure defendants weren't just, you know, impulsively deciding to represent themselves without getting, like, the risks.
I see. So they needed to understand what they were getting into.
Yeah, and that's where this idea of a knowing and intelligent waiver comes in.
Okay, break that down for me. What does that mean, knowing and intelligent waiver?
So basically, think of it like a legal reality check.
Okay.
If you want to represent yourself, you have to demonstrate to the court that you really get the potential consequences.
Gotcha. So, like, you don't need to be a lawyer or anything, but you got to show you know what you're signing up for.
Precisely. You can't be clueless about, you know, the risks.
That makes sense. But, I mean, how do courts decide if someone actually meets that standard? Like, it seems super subjective, right?
It can be tricky for sure, but judges usually have the sort of structured conversation with the defendant. It's called a Faretta colloquy.
Faretta colloquy. Okay.
Yeah. So in this colloquy, they'll ask the defendant all these questions about their understanding of the charges against them, the possible penalties, all the complicated court procedures. They really put them to the test.
I see. So they're pulling back the curtain, showing the defendant what it's really like, all the, like, nitty gritty.
Right. The goal is to make sure the defendant isn't, you know, operating under some fantasy about how the legal system works.
Yeah. I imagine those conversations can be pretty intense, especially if you're, you know, facing criminal charges and everything.
Absolutely. It's high stakes. And it really highlights this push and pull between autonomy and the state's interest in a fair trial.
Yeah, because on one hand, the court needs to respect the defendant's right to choose, right? But on the other hand, they need to make sure that choice is, you know, truly informed.
Exactly. It's a tough balance.
So even though Faretta established this whole right to self-representation, it's not as simple as just saying, I want to be my own lawyer, and that's it.
You got it. There are definitely hurdles, and even today, there's a lot of debate about how well this knowing and intelligent waiver thing actually works in real-life courtrooms.
I can see that being a big point of contention, I mean, it's probably pretty hard to gauge someone's actual understanding just through a conversation, no matter how thorough it is, right?
Right. And some critics argue that it's too easy for like a really determined defendant to basically slip through the cracks, even if they're not ready to deal with, you know, all the complexities of the legal system.
Oh, that's a good point. And I guess that brings us back to those dissenting justices. They were worried that allowing self-representation could end up leading to, like, messy trials, delays, and even wrongful convictions.
Exactly. Even people who support the right to self-representation, they recognize that it can create a lot of headaches for the courts.
Oh, I bet. Like, what happens if someone represents themselves, loses the case, and then appeals based on, like, their own bad lawyering?
Yeah, that's a great point.
It seems like the potential for things to get complicated goes way beyond the initial trial itself.
Absolutely. And it makes you wonder about the long-term effects Feretta has had on, like, the whole criminal justice system, right?
Right.
Like, has it actually given individuals more power, or has it just, you know, made things more confusing and prone to error?
It really makes you think about whether prioritizing autonomy above everything else can actually backfire.
It's a tough question. What happens when someone's really stubborn about representing themselves, even if they've been told all the risks, and then that leads to a less fair outcome?
Man, that's a hard one.
It's the million-dollar question, right? Feretta put this really, like, complex dilemma in front of the Supreme Court. And their solution, while groundbreaking, yeah, it definitely wasn't perfect.
Yeah, I see. I mean, it almost feels like a catch-22, right?
Totally.
Because if someone's adamant about representing themselves, even after they know the risks, is that really a knowing and intelligent waiver?
Right.
Or is it more like they're setting themselves up to fail?
It's a question that's honestly been bothering legal experts for decades.
Yeah.
No easy answer, I'm afraid. Some people even argue that, like, no matter how thorough that Feretta colloquy is, you can't really understand the legal system until you've actually been through a trial.
So it's like you can't really grasp the depth of the ocean until you've dived in.
Yeah, exactly.
And in this case, the stakes are incredibly high. Like, we're talking about someone's freedom, their reputation, possibly their whole future.
Right. You can't take this lightly.
Okay, so that's the individual side of it.
Mm-hmm.
What about the courts themselves? Like, I imagine a defendant who's representing themselves needs a lot more guidance from the judge, right?
For sure. And that can really slow things down, especially in a system that's already so overloaded.
Yeah, I can see that being a logistical nightmare.
It can be. And this was a big part of what the dissenting justices in Feretta were concerned about. They were worried that this whole right to self-representation, even though it's well-intentioned, it might create more problems than it solves.
Yeah. It's a tough situation all around.
Absolutely. So we have this principle of autonomy on one side, you know, that basic right to make your own choices, even if other people think they're dumb.
Right.
But then there's this worry that letting people who aren't prepared to deal with the law represent themselves, well, that could really mess with the fairness and efficiency of the courts.
You've got individual rights on one side and the need for a system that actually works on the other.
Exactly.
Tough balance.
And Feretta is a great example of how that tension plays out in real life. It's not just theoretical.
Makes you think, are there ways to, like, tweak that knowing and intelligent waiver standard to make it better? Maybe, like, make defendants go through some legal education or give them better resources before they go it alone.
Those are really interesting ideas. And, you know, some legal experts have suggested, like, making special courts specifically for people who represent themselves.
Oh, that's interesting. A specialized court, huh?
Yeah. The idea is that it could make the process smoother. You know, the judges would be used to dealing with people who don't have lawyers, and those defendants would get more targeted support.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility.
So it seems like there's a lot of room for, like, new ideas and creative solutions in this area.
Totally.
But it's clear that we can't just get rid of the right to self-representation altogether.
Right.
Feretta made it a key part of our legal system, and there are good reasons for that.
Yeah.
I mean, at its core, Feretta is about recognizing that individuals have agency, that they have a right to make choices about their own lives, even if those choices seem a little offbeat.
It's about respecting that people can make their own decisions, even if we don't agree with them.
Yeah. It's like acknowledging that sometimes you got to let people make their own mistakes.
And that's part of what freedom means, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's a reminder that the legal system isn't just about, like, getting the right outcome every time.
Right.
It's about giving people a voice.
Yeah.
Letting them participate in their own defense. And that can be really powerful.
Especially in a system that can feel so, like, impersonal and overwhelming.
Exactly. It makes it more human.
I like that. More human.
It's a reminder that defendants aren't just cases, you know? Yeah. They're real people with stories, and they deserve to be heard.
Speaking of being heard, I'd love to get our listeners' thoughts. What are you guys thinking so far about Feretta?
Yeah. What are your initial reactions to all this? The idea of representing yourself in court and all the potential downsides. We want to hear from you.
And for those of you who've actually experienced self-representation, either as a defendant or a lawyer, we'd love to get your insights. What were the biggest challenges you faced? What advice would you give someone thinking about going it alone?
Yeah, let's keep this conversation going. Hit us up with your thoughts. It's interesting, you know, thinking about Feretta in the context of, like, legal competency.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Well, if someone's considered mentally incompetent to stand trial, they can't represent themselves, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
But what about someone who is mentally competent but just doesn't know much about the law?
Ooh, that's a good point. Like, where do you draw the line?
Exactly.
It's a tough one.
So Feretta doesn't just give everyone a free pass to be their own lawyer, then?
Definitely not. It's not like you can just yell, I want to represent myself, and the court's like, okay, cool, go ahead.
Right.
There's way more to it than that. Yeah, and it seems like this whole knowing and intelligent waiver thing is, like, the key.
Absolutely. It's this constant balancing act for the courts.
Right, because they have to make sure defendants aren't, like, screwing up their own cases just because they don't know the law.
Exactly. But they also can't force people to have a lawyer if they genuinely want to go it alone.
Yeah, I see that. It's tricky. It almost seems like a catch-22, though, right?
Kinda, yeah.
Like, if someone insists on representing themselves, even after being told all the risks, is that really knowing and intelligent?
It's a question that's been bugging legal scholars forever.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And to be honest, there's no easy answer.
I figured as much.
Some people even argue that it's impossible to truly know if someone understands the legal system unless they've actually been through a trial.
So it's like, you don't know how deep the ocean is until you jump in.
Exactly. And in this situation, we're not talking about a casual dip in the pool.
Right. The stakes are super high. Someone's freedom is on the line.
Their reputation, their future. Yeah, you can't just brush it off.
And what about the impact on the courts themselves? Like, wouldn't it be way more work for judges to deal with people who are representing themselves?
Oh, for sure. These pro se cases, as they're called, can be a huge drain on resources and time.
I bet.
Judges have to, like, walk this tightrope between making sure the defendant gets, you know, understands the process, but also not giving them too much help or legal advice.
Yeah, that sounds tricky.
It's a tough balancing act, and it gets back to what the dissenting justices in Feretta were worried about.
Right. They thought this right to self-representation could actually end up making things worse for everyone.
Exactly. So we have this idea of autonomy, this fundamental right to control your own destiny.
Yeah, I get that.
But then there's this real concern that letting unprepared people handle their own legal stuff could, like, undermine the whole system.
Right. So you have individual choice on one side and, like, the effectiveness of the courts on the other.
Right. And Feretta is this awesome case study for that whole dilemma.
It's like a microcosm of this bigger societal debate.
Yeah.
Like, where do we draw the line between respecting individual choices and protecting people from themselves?
Exactly. And that's what makes Feretta so relevant, even beyond the legal world.
Oh, I see that. It applies to all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, think about healthcare, for example. Patients have the right to refuse treatment, even if it's bad for them.
Or in finance. People can make really bad investments, even if experts tell them not to.
Exactly. So it's this universal question of autonomy versus, like, well-being.
Wow, I never thought about it that way. Feretta is more relevant than I thought.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if there are ways to, you know, adjust that whole knowing and intelligent waiver thing to strike a better balance.
For sure. Like, maybe defendants should have to go through some sort of legal crash course before they're allowed to represent themselves.
Right. Or maybe we could give them more support and resources to prepare.
Those are all good ideas. Some people have even proposed creating special courts specifically for pro se cases.
Oh, right. We were talking about that earlier. Like, a specialized court just for people representing themselves.
Yeah. It could streamline the whole process. The judges would be experts in handling pro se cases, and defendants would get more tailored support.
I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a win-win. It's clear, though, that we can't just scrap the right to self-representation altogether.
Right.
Feretta made that right a cornerstone of our system, but for good reason.
Totally agree.
It's all about respecting individual choice, acknowledging that people have the right to make decisions about their own lives, even if those decisions seem risky to others.
I like that. It's about trusting people to make their own choices, even if we don't think they're the best choices.
Yeah, and it reminds us that the legal system isn't just about getting the right outcome as defined by, like, expert.
It's about giving people a say in their own fate.
And that can be super empowering.
It is. It makes the system more human, more responsive to the needs of the individual.
More human. I like that.
It reminds us that defendants are more than just case files.
They're real people with their own stories, their own hopes and fears.
Exactly. And they deserve to be heard.
Okay, so now I'm really curious to hear what our listeners think. What are your thoughts on all this? This whole self-representation thing, the potential problems, the possible solutions? We want to know.
Yeah. What are your initial reactions? Do you think the knowing and intelligent waiver standard works? Do you think specialized courts are a good idea? Hit us up with your thoughts.
And for those of you who have actually been through self-representation, either as a defendant or as a legal professional, we'd love to get your take. What challenges did you face? What advice would you give to someone thinking about representing themselves?
Let's keep this conversation going. Share your stories and insights with us.
Okay, so we've gone pretty deep on Freda v. California.
Yeah, we've explored a lot.
This tension between the right to counsel and the right to represent yourself.
Right, and that whole knowing and intelligent waiver thing.
Exactly. But before we finish up, I think it'd be interesting to zoom out a little.
Yeah, good idea.
And think about the bigger picture implications of this case.
Absolutely. Because Freda didn't just affect, like, individual defendants.
Right.
It had this huge ripple effect across the whole legal system.
Like what?
Well, it really solidified this idea of defendant autonomy as a core principle.
Right. So their right to make their own choices, even if they're not, like, the best choices.
Exactly. And that's a pretty powerful concept, you know?
Yeah.
It's basically saying that even when you're facing serious charges, you still have this basic right to make decisions about your own defense.
Yeah, it's about respecting that people have agency, even when they're in a really tough spot.
It really gets to the heart of what a fair trial means.
Oh, how so?
Well, the process shouldn't just be about efficiency, you know, or even about getting the right result every single time.
I see.
It has to respect the individual, their right to make their own choices, even if those choices might seem kind of dumb from a legal perspective.
It's almost like saying that the right to mess up, to make a mistake, is part of what real freedom means.
That's a great way to put it. Freda forces us to face this uncomfortable truth. Autonomy comes with a price.
Right.
And it asks us, as a society, how much are we willing to let people choose their own path, even when it clashes with other values?
That's a question that goes way beyond the courtroom, though, right?
For sure. I mean, think about healthcare, education, even parenting. We're always dealing with this tension between respecting people's choices and trying to protect them from harm.
So Freda is like this legal case study for this much bigger societal issue.
Exactly.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
It is.
So I'm curious, for all the lawyers and law students listening, what's the big takeaway from Freda? How should they be thinking about this in their own work?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's a reminder to be super careful when a defendant wants to waive their right to counsel.
Yeah, okay.
You know those Freda colloquies we talked about? Those aren't just a formality. They're really important for making sure the defendant isn't waiving their rights without understanding what they're doing.
It's about ensuring they're making a genuine choice,
mm-hmm.
not just like acting out of frustration or because they think they can game the system.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
And beyond that, I think Freda challenges us to really think about those potential downsides of self-representation.
Yeah, even when the waiver is knowing and intelligent and all that.
Right. Like, are there ways to minimize the risks without totally taking away people's autonomy? Are there new and creative solutions out there that could support these folks who choose to represent themselves?
I like that. It's not about shutting down the option, but figuring out how to make it work better.
Precisely.
It seems like there's a lot for legal professionals to think about here.
Oh, absolutely. The legacy of Freda, it's not just about like upholding the right to self-representation. It's about wrestling with all the ethical and practical challenges that come with it.
And for anyone listening who might be thinking about representing themselves, Freda is like, I don't know, a warning and a kind of encouragement all at the same time.
Right.
Like, it affirms your right to go your own way, but it also says, hey, be careful. Know what you're getting into.
Yeah, knowledge is power.
Exactly. Do your research, understand the risks, and make sure you're ready for what's coming.
Because it's not an easy road.
This deep dive has really given us a lot to think about.
It has.
Foretta v. California is this powerful reminder that individual choice matters.
It does.
But it also shows us that true freedom works best when it's combined with knowledge, careful thought, and respect for how complex our legal system really is.
Beautifully said.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed exploring Foretta v. California with us.